I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today's Monday, February 9th, 2015. The time is 3:30 p.m. Committee members present: Vice Chair Senator Costello, Senator Stoltz, Senator Coghill, Senator Wadakowski, and myself, Senator Giesel. I expect Senator Stedman and Senator Stedman soon, and Senator Machicki is just now joining us. Welcome, Senator Machicki. Recording secretary today is Ann again. Thank you, Ann. Thatcher is manning the audio, and Ike is resource staff. So today we are interviewing governor appointees for two commissions. The first one we will review are the two appointees to the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. And then after that, we will talk to an individual who has been appointed to the Oil and Gas Conservation Committee. So we'll hear from the appointees, and then the committee can pose questions. Then we'll open it up to public testimony. So I will begin alphabetically by welcoming Mr. Ben Brown to the table. Welcome, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And again, for the record, Benjamin Brown from the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission.
Great. Thank you. Now, before you get going, partly for the benefit of the committee, but also for the public who are viewing, I'm just going to review from the page in Boards and Commissions about this commission, okay? So this is the Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission that you have been appointed to. It does require legislative confirmation. The term is 4 years. The board consists of three members appointed by the governor with a broad range of professional experience, none of whom has a vested economic interest in the interim use permit, entry permit, commercial fishing vessel or gear, or in any fishery resource processing or marketing business. The function of the board is to promote conservation and sustained yield management of fishery resource and regulates and controls entry into commercial fisheries. A quorum consists of two of the commission members. It is a regulatory and quasi-judicial agency. The salary is equal to step range 27. So for committee members, that's $108,000 per year. The appointees to this commission are also then placed in the PERS system, Public Employees Retirement System. The commission meets throughout the year. So that's just a little summary to orient committee members and the public to this committee. So if you would overview your experience. I know you're a reappointment to this commission, so welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Again, Ben Brown from CFEC. My resume has been distributed to the committee members, and it's very similar to my resume that you saw if you were on this committee 4 years ago when Governor Parnell initially appointed me to the commission. I've added my last 4 years of service and changed a few things in non-employment areas on there to reflect where I currently am in life. But I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I was born in Anchorage. I was raised in Anchorage, briefly in Honolulu. My parents are both doctors and had to travel there for their professional needs. Went from sixth grade through high school at Palmer Junior High and Palmer High School, school at Georgetown. Came back, worked in this building as a legislative aide for the better part of the 90s, and the late Senator Tim Kelly strongly encouraged me not to stay here forever and strongly encouraged me to go off to law school, which I did. He was a very wise man and a wonderful boss. I learned a lot working for him. I went to law school at Northeastern in Boston, came back for the Honorable Larry Weeks, who is the presiding judge of the First Judicial District in 2001, and have lived in the capital city year-round ever since. Since then, I've done some other things with the state of Alaska, an administrative law judge at the Department of Revenue, legislative liaison at the Department of Environmental Conservation. And then I was in private practice at two different firms here in Juneau, the most recent Baxter, Bruce & Sullivan, prior to Governor Parnell's decision to appoint me 4 years ago. I knew my term was expiring on the 1st of March of this year, and right around New Year's, I thought I would express a desire, interest in being reappointed to Governor Walker, who chose to reappoint me. I'm very grateful for his belief in my ability to continue doing this job. It is, I think, the second time in CFE's history, with the appointment of Mr. Ruprecht, whom you'll be hearing from in a moment, that all three of the commissioners are, in fact, attorneys and members of the Alaska Bar Association. We could all make jokes about why that would be a bad thing, but to be serious about it for a moment, it really does provide a nice background for some of the more difficult legal decisions we have to make. And Madam Chairman, you referred to our being a quasi-judicial commission, and that means that we do have judicial powers and the administrative law decisions that we make regarding applications for or transfers of limited entry permits. One of the reasons the commission was created 40 years ago as an independent agency was so that there would not be any appearance of undue pressure from the Department of Fish and Game, I believe, on the decisions being made by the three commissioners about whom should receive a permit based on that individual's fishing history, their relative economic dependence on the fishing activity underlying the permit application. Because, of course, we know at Fish and Game we have a commissioner overseeing the Division of Commercial Fisheries that's regulating the biological side of the fishery, and then in conjunction with the Board of Fisheries actually deciding what kind of gear can be used and when and where, with the very, very important effects, I don't have to tell any of you, of your committee members, Madam Chairman, that affect both the biological health of a whole range of very important fish species and then the economic returns to the fishermen who depend on them to support their families and to be vibrant parts of Alaska's economy. So in the past 4 years, I certainly did not have any vested interest in a permit and a fishery and any gear or vessel when I was appointed, and I still don't. I've learned a tremendous amount about what we do as an independent agency, how we've evolved over time, and how we might continue to evolve, especially given the straitened fiscal circumstances that the state now faces. So probably going to face some different challenges in the coming 4 years if the legislature and its wisdom confirms Governor Walker's decision to reappoint me, but I'm happy to work as closely as necessary with members of this body and the other body to come up with whatever the right future for our agency is, because I definitely believe fishing is going to remain as important going forward for the remainder of my lifetime in Alaska, and I want to make sure that there's a system in place that makes sure that permits are given to those who deserve them under the legal structures that have been set up and approved by the Alaska Supreme Court, and that the integrity of the value of those permits and the stability of the fisheries is as maximal as possible, because I think that's good policy for Alaskans. So in a nutshell, that's who I am and what I've been doing for the past 4 years since I've been at CFEC, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about me, about that work, or about anything else that the committee members would like to discuss.
Very good. Thank you for that great summary. Committee members, questions? Senator Costello.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Brown, I certainly appreciate your...
Pardon me. I'm so sorry, Senator Costello. I wanted the record to reflect that Senator Stedman had joined us. Pardon me.
No worries.
Go ahead.
Appreciate your experience serving on the commission, and I was just wondering if you wanted to talk about some of the challenges that you see coming in the future and maybe give a specific challenge that you see and why you might be a good person to have on the commission as we face that challenge.
Madam Chairman, to respond to Senator Costello, the challenges that we face as an agency are in some regards different from other agencies, and then some are very much the same, which is fiscal pressure. We're fortunate at CFEC to generate significantly more in program receipts and designated general fund revenues than we spend on our annual operations. And since I've been on the commission over the past 4 years, the legislature, the finance committees, in their wisdom, chosen to allocate those excess revenues first towards the Fisherman's Fund, which is the corpus of money that exists to stand in place of workers' compensation for fishermen. And then the rest have gone to capital projects that benefit various fisheries. This year's proposed budget doesn't have, well, the Fisherman's Fund transfer, I imagine, will still take place. But this year, I believe the budget has a little over $3 million going to underwrite the operating cost of the Division of Commercial Fisheries. It makes perfect sense to me. You know, our permits would not have value. Fishermen would not be able to go out and use the permits for which they pay an annual renewal fee to take fish out of the water and sell it and support their families without having the managers in place. And so I think Comfish obviously is not an illogical place for those funds to go. We don't really have any say over that, but I guess I'm opining that that's kind of not a bad direction for the state to keep going. In order for that to work, we want to make sure that the integrity of the limited entry system is not diminished in any way, so that those permits would not be seen as valuable assets in which people invest. And and of course they are used as collateral by two specific loan programs, the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund run by the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and the Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank, which is a quasi-private bank. And the very fact that the permits can be used as collateral for loans issued by those two financial entities is an example of why it's important to have a solid, stable structure in place overseeing the issuance of, and there are not that many permits still currently being issued. We're finally adjudicating some of the initial fisheries, but the transfer of permits, either on a permanent or an emergency basis, is something that will continue going on, as long as we're all around, because people get old and they can't use their permits to go out and fish anymore. And they sometimes will want to make the economic choice to sell that permit to someone else and let that person start a new life as a fisherman in Alaska, whether they're an Alaskan or not. Because as you know, I believe the committee knows, Madam Chairman, many, many of our permits, about a quarter over time, are held by non-Alaskans. I think stability is probably somewhat beneficial at this time. Of course, when I was first appointed to the commission, retired District Court Judge Peter Frelick and Bruce Twomley were the other two commissioners. Bruce Twomley is our chairman, and he has been there since the early 80s, and so he's an absolute invaluable and, I would say, unique wealth of knowledge about where we've come from and where we are right now. Judge Frelick retired, and his seat was vacant for a while, and it was filled very briefly by another former commissioner whom many of you know, Frank Homan. Because there was one specific case where Chairman Twomley had recused himself and we didn't have a quorum. And so Frank Homan is re-retired, and we have a new gentleman again from whom you'll be hearing soon. But I do think having two of the three commissioners with some years of experience will be helpful as we seek ways to and again, across state government, I think this is going on, analyze staffing levels, organizational structures, the way we're doing what we're doing, and try to make sure we're providing the maximum amount of service for the least amount of money. So those are some of the reasons why I think I might be suitable for confirmation as a reappointed commissioner, and why I'm willing to continue doing the job.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. You know, one of the things I reviewed was the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission 2013-14 annual report. And in it, it talks about the cases that you've adjudicated. And it says that you made a substantial progress in reducing the commission's adjudication caseload from 68 originally limited fisheries. It looks like you got down to, well, a lesser number than the 68. So how did you achieve that? How is a case adjudicated? Can you talk us through the process?
Well, Madam Chairman, the 68, that figure is actually the number of fisheries, discrete fisheries, which is a species, a geographic location, which can be statewide, but can be smaller, and a gear type. So we've limited entry into 68 fisheries, 67 of which remain limited. One is reverted to open access, the weather vane scallop fishery. So each fishery is limited when pressure has come to bear on the fishery in a manner that it no longer is going to be sustainable if it is an open-access fishery. We used to use the term unlimited for fisheries that hadn't been limited, but I don't think that sends a good message. It's kind of a confusing term. So open-access is the term of art we like to use now to describe fisheries that are not limited. But when a fishery has attracted enough interest from the fleet that someone is concerned, they can petition the commission. And in the case of the initial salmon fisheries, it was the legislature saying, you need to limit entries to these. This is not working. And at that point, we have to look back from 4 years before the year in which the limitation process is going to begin to establish a maximum number of permits in the fishery. And then once that's done by the adoption of a regulation, then a somewhat lengthy process begins. And I've not been involved in the past 4 years in the process of initiating limitation of a new fishery. We've had a few fisheries of interest, I would call them, that various fishermen have brought to our attention where they think limitation might be a good idea, but we have not formally adopted a regulation to initiate a limitation process for any of those. I think it's possible that we might do so. I don't really... This is where it gets quasi-judicial, because I'm kind of talking about a case if I were to go into too much detail in that regard. But if and when that happens again, we'll pick a date, and then people who can prove that they had any sort of fishing participation in the fishery in 4 years leading up to that date will be counted, and the maximum number can be no lower than the highest number in any of those 4 years. And then we will determine some sort of point structure where we will ask fishermen interested in receiving a permanent permit, to tell us when they caught and where they caught and how much they caught and how much they sold it for, depending on the fishery, relative economic dependence information. So if people are mostly part-time but they're making a lot of money doing something else, the level of investment in gear and vessels, all those things are worthy criteria to determine who ought to get a fishing permit based on prior activity. But it's based on the premise that if you were doing it in the past, then you are entitled to continue doing it in the future more than someone who wasn't doing it in the past. When those decisions are made, when the point classifications are made, fishermen are informed, yes, you got one, or you got one, but it's not transferable, so you could keep fishing in this fishery until you're no longer able to do so, but you can't sell the permit as a transferable asset, or they're just told, no, you don't get one. And as you might well imagine, people who are told, no, you don't get a permit, don't necessarily want to take that as the final word, and then they would appeal it from the adjudication staff level to a hearing officer, and then ultimately up to the commission, and the three commissioners review each and every case where there's a request. And often, for purposes of finality, we review all the cases on administrative review, trying to uphold or, if necessary, reverse decisions made lower down in the process. And then after we're done with our work at the administrative law level, that's the final administrative law. that's an exhaustion of the administrative remedy of the administrative law process. And then those who are still interested in having a further dialogue about whether or not they're going to get a permit are able to appeal our decision to the Superior Court. And if they don't like what the Superior Court says, the Superior Court can remand it back to us, or it can uphold what we did. They can appeal the case to the Alaska Supreme Court. And the Alaska Supreme Court, because this is pretty much a strictly a state law matter, whether you get a permit or not, is the final arbiter of the decisions that we hand down. And so that's how it's happened in the past. The backlog of which you spoke, which was 900 cases about the time I went away to law school, has been whittled away by diligent work by the commissioners going through. An unintended consequence, and I've only been there for 4 years, was that some of the cases saw a tremendous amount of time pass between when they had a hearing before a hearing officer and when a decision that was adverse to them was made. The problem with that, of course, is people don't live forever. Witnesses go away. Other forms of evidence people might want to bring before the commission are not as available as they would have been. So I've been able, because our caseload is not 900 case crushing, just unbelievably huge, to spend a very fair amount of time reviewing some of the adjudication decisions that have been on my desk since I have been there. And I've written opinions, and they've been appealed to Superior Court, and this court has remanded them. And so I've been participating in the process, but not with that massive volume of cases that was done in the past.
Thank you. One of the things that I contemplate as I look at this commission, of course, we're in budget times, right? So we have three commissioners, both at in excess of $100,000 a year salary, and there are 34 commission employees as well. So I'm looking at the cost of this and wondering, it looks like staff does some of the decision making. And then, as you point out, people can appeal then to the commissioners?
Well, Madam Chairman, to respond, actually, our staff is now under 30. And it was larger in the late 80s. We had an executive director, and we don't anymore. So in addition to our administrative law quasi-judicial roles, the commissioners get to exercise all personnel functions and kind of, and there's some work involved in that, certainly. There will be a very healthy dialogue, I think, about ways we might restructure our commission. There's already been one review that was conducted that is now kind of out there. It's been out there for a little less than a week. We have not had a chance to respond to that. But so the committee members know, Madam Chairman, the Division of Legislative Audit is also conducting a legislative audit, entirely apart and separate from the review that was done. And that's being done on an expedited basis, or at least they're attempting to do it at Ledger on an expedited basis to have some sort of report before the end of the session. Both those documents will undoubtedly inform whatever the future for CFEC may be. A legislation was introduced at the end of last session to abolish CFEC and annex all of its functions to the Department of Fish and Game. I think that's the nuclear option. I think it obviously eradicates the independence, which was one of the main reasons we were founded as an independent agency 40 years ago, and it would eradicate any hint of independence of decision-making if the director of a division that performed the same functions were directly answerable to the Commissioner of Fish and Game and then to the governor. So there are some very strong reasons that I think I will have the opportunity, if I continue serving this position, to kind of point out over the next months, years. But that by no means indicates that I don't think that there are a few more efficiencies that we could achieve to make sure that we are, But for the money we're generating, as much of it as possible is going to things other than paying for staff at CFEC, if staff at CFEC are not the best things to spend that money on. And I felt that way ever since I was appointed 4 years ago. $50 a barrel oil just makes me think about it a little more frequently and a little more intensely.
Sure, thank you. And I am looking at the February 4th, 2015 review that was done. There were questions about the staff and the pay scales and those kinds of things, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And I'm looking forward to that legislative review. Further questions? Senator Stoltz?
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome, Commissioner Brown. What can you describe the committees, areas of the CFEC's actions that you would consider allocative, either directly or indirectly?
We don't allocate.
Well, directly or indirectly. Sometimes, Madam Chair.
Madam Chairman, Senator Stoltz. Well, I guess one area in which that comes up is, you know, we've had some talk about buybacks in various fisheries, and that requires action probably from the Board of Fisheries. When we're spoken to by the fishermen who have an interest in that, they want to know if we can figure out a way to help them retire some of the permits in a fishery. But if a fishery has been initially created in a manner that doesn't distinguish between one place geographically and another, it might be very hard to do a buyback. And so I guess that would be an example of an indirect contribution to the allocation process if our initial limitation of a fishery didn't reflect the way the fishery was prosecuted years later on. I guess another indirect or very direct way, but it's kind of just common sense, you know, by determining that a certain individual gets a permit and a certain other individual does not get a permit, obviously the one who gets the permit is going to be legally able to harvest the resource, and we are, the way our structure has been established, giving permits to people who can prove that they've been out there catching more fish. And so, I mean, it's, like I said, that's kind of almost too obvious to state, but I guess the end effect is we're rewarding efficiency. I mean, we're less likely to give a permit to a fisherman who's not very good at catching fish than the other way around. So that creates more pressure on the resource right there. But we are not in the same role as the Board of Fisheries, working with managers from the Division of Commercial Fisheries, involved in deciding when something is open or when it isn't. So I hope that answers your question.
And I'll plumb those depths further with you. I know we
have a follow-up question.
I do have a couple of questions. I wouldn't call it an audit, Madam Chair, but it looks like some type of an external review, and there's some subjectivity, and what's that called? And I hope that becomes part of the record, February 2014 lengthy memo signed by Commissioner Cotton. It refers to 68 fisheries that are established, and of course that's accepting the veracity of everything said in this report. But can you give us 68 fisheries, some type of a thumbnail, are those different types of gear or different areas? Just give us some examples.
Madam Chairman, Senator Stoltz, each fishery is a geographic area and a gear type and a species. And so there is a southeast gooey duck clam dive fishery. There is Bristol Bay drift gillnet. There's a statewide finfish. And so each one has a code, S03T, that refers to each of those three aspects that constitutes a fishery.
And some of those have been, if I might end up just to shorten this, some of them have been established by the legislature. Is that correct?
Well, the initial limitation of salmon fisheries was at legislative command. As time has gone on, it's been petitions from the fishermen or an awareness on the part of commissioners, and this is before my time, that there was too much pressure for sablefish fishing in Southeast. There's also a nexus with federal fisheries managers when the decision to allocate some species has been taken away from the Alaska Board of Fisheries, such as in the case of halibut, and that's a federal decision. And so there, instead of there being a state limited entry system, it's an interim use permit, but the allocation and the quota are things that are determined by federal managers.
Madam Chair, can you give some examples? It seems just like the dive fishery alone was one that certainly was muscled through by Bill Williams, the former representative, and there's a lot of other types. And what is the, we hear from segments of the industry that the legislature should, and that certainly is an allocative and establishment industry. How does the CFEC view the role of the legislature? We hear from industry the legislature should stay out of all those types of decisions, except for when they invite us. Is that how that's worked?
Well, again, Madam Chairman, Senator Stoltz, I've not been around at a point in time where we've invited the legislature to step in and do anything. I've been around at a time where we asked the legislature to extend an existing program, and I was unsuccessful in my efforts to do so, the weather-vane scallop fishery. To answer Madam Chairman Senator Stoltz's policy question, it would be very difficult if the legislature were to undertake making the vast majority of allocation decisions, because it would consume all your time, and it would make it less difficult. It just might make it very difficult to operate as a legislature if you were the Super Board of Fisheries, and it would probably also undermine the work that the Board of Fisheries does as the Board of Fisheries. So I don't know what the right balance is when the legislature should step in and make those decisions, but I would think as infrequently as possible in hopes that there is an allocative process through the Board of Fisheries that is working. And if it's not working, that may invite the coming in and making those decisions that you speak of. But I guess my goal would be to see the Board of Fisheries working as well as possible in conjunction with other entities of state government and federal government to make sure that fisheries are sustainable and prosperous.
I got about one and a half, and it'll be real quick.
All right.
On the Susitna drainage, I was real surprised to know there was an established commercial hooligan fishery, an authorization under a limited entry, which is primarily a family and subsistence, personal use type fishery, until the first guy shows up with a pretty big operation and figures out how to harvest that. Boy, there'll be, how do they say that out in the valley, there'll be heck to pay once. And actually, the person that told me about it, they'd looked into establishing, getting into one of those, but the economics didn't work out, was our newly appointed commissioner. He looked at that as trying to see if he could do a commercial operation there. And I was really shocked that hooligan would be established as a potential commercial fishery. And I'm going to tell you, the first day that was on the front page of the paper or TV, that there was a big operation that went in there and mopped up all the hooligan, there'd be a lot of folks upset. Now, if you guys down the three lawyers in Juneau, it's not a big deal what goes on up there necessarily, but I got to tell you, those of us that are involved and have our constituents involved in those traditional Alaskan, both Alaskan Natives and others, and I guess if I really wanted to manage fisheries, I'd become the chair of the House Special Committee on Fisheries, but I don't want to be that. But I'll leave that last question I asked before that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chairman, Senator Stoltz, I believe that all three of us on the commission care about what's happening all over Alaska very much, and I think that your observation that the existence of a commercial fishery, even if it's not open from year to year, even if it's one of the ones where it's not open and people don't have to pay their renewal fees because it's not open, or they get them back if they do pay them, can still have an effect on other users. Another good example, far away from the Matsu, where of course I care very much about, I'm looking forward to my 30th Palmer reunion this summer, so I will definitely be there for that. And I won't have time to do much fishing, I don't think. But out on the Kuskokwim River, the horrible situation with Chinook salmon out there, the near total lack of Chinook harvest opportunities to subsistence users, there are still theoretical commercial fisheries out there for that species. And I hadn't thought about this, but the Kuskokwim Subsistence Salmon Panel is meeting now and trying to address and come up with ways to solve this problem. I was very interested to hear a member of that panel, former Representative Mary Sattler. Even the existence of a commercial fishery at some point previous in time changes the nature of the fishery. And once people have used commercial gear and had a commercial mindset going in, it kind of amps everything up. So when it remains personal use for subsistence, there can still be an effect. And I think that's something we must take into account, and anyone in a decision-making role that affects fishing policy should take into account, because it does matter, and it certainly is not possible for there to be a thriving commercial fishery for every species in every part of the state, and if we don't admit that, then we're probably never going to have sound policy that's sustainable.
Thank you. Senator Machiki had some questions.
I have a few, and a simple answer on the status of the legislature is just to check your constitution on their role. It's quite clear in what the Board of Fish does for a living and what we do for a living. But while the weather vane scallop by default went back into an open fishery, since you've been there, have you gone limited on any of the fisheries?
Madam Chairman, Senator Machiki, we have not initiated a new limitation. We have adjudicated some cases that are in the process as the time for appeal runs that will close out the adjudications in those fisheries. But it's not a new fishery that we've begun the limitation process on.
Okay. So,
follow up?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Do you have support in your confirmation from the fishing industry, which is sort of what the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission is about?
I was very grateful for the support of the United Fishermen of Alaska 4 years ago when I was initially appointed. To be honest, since my reappointment was announced last Wednesday, I have not had a chance to meet with people from UFA who are here today, Julianne Currie, their executive director, and Jerry McKeown, the board president. So I hope that they will support me, and I guess I probably ought to find out a more solid answer to that question before my next confirmation hearing. But I was grateful for the support 4 years ago, and I certainly do believe that having the support of the commercial fishing industry is an important thing to do this job.
I have a couple of follow-ups.
Yes, follow-up?
Yeah, so you've done a good job in the last 4 years. I've followed the commission. I understand their role. I understand the reason for limited entry is to ensure responsible harvests of Alaska's fish. But what was your experience before being appointed? What made you an appropriate commissioner?
Well, and then, Madam Chairman, you read the statutory requirements, and I did have a pretty, Senator Mushicki, through the chair, a diverse array of legal experience. You know, I was a legislative aide for many years before I went to law school. Upon my return, I clerked for a Superior Court judge, which is the main court of general jurisdiction in the Alaska legal system. I was an administrative law judge doing administrative law appeal hearings at the Department of Revenue. Now, those weren't fishing related specifically. They were all child support enforcement appeals, but many of the persons involved in those cases made money from fishing, and so I had to look into some of that information in trying to determine whether or not child support amounts calculated by CSSD staff were appropriate, and that involved looking into some of the economic activity of people involved in those cases. The law, again, getting back to kind of the legislative side of this, because we do have to come, whether successfully or not, and ask the legislature to do things sometimes. I have had the experience of both being a legislative aide and being a legislative liaison for one of the principal departments of state government. The first law firm I worked at in private practice, I was doing mostly personal injury tort work, so there wasn't a close nexus there. But then when I was at my most recent private law firm, that firm had done a fair amount of work representing applicants, none certainly in any cases that I've looked at. And so I guess just in the course of being there for 3 years, I worked with some other attorneys and was aware of how private advocates can really, really increase the likelihood that one will be successful in applying for a permit or appealing the denial of a permit. And that made me appreciate the need to look at unrepresented applicants or those who were unrepresented earlier in the application process as fairly as possible before they were represented by counsel. So I guess all of that, I would hope, constitutes that diverse array of life and legal experience as an Alaskan attorney. Certainly, I did not know everything I know today 4 years ago when I started the job, but I've tried to absorb as much information as possible and, again, learn from Chairman Twomley as much as I possibly can. And I would hope that if I'm there 4 more years from now, I'll know even more about CFEC and what we do. But I certainly feel like having that diverse array of life experience as an Alaskan and fairly diverse array of legal experience as an attorney were sound qualifications for the position.
Thank you. Can I ask one more, please?
Yes.
So things change, right? And some of the fisheries that are commercial fisheries today, as populations change and demands change, may not remain commercial fisheries in the future. And there are commercial fisheries likely to occur that we don't know about yet today. Can you tell us the commission's role as those changes take place so that we kind of understand your activities within the commission? Because I would imagine you'd have to have, like some of us, or like most of us, have to have some pretty thick skin as people are affected one way or another.
Madam Chairman, Senator Mushicki, the way the Limited Entry Act was written, much like many things when you're a young state, was just looking forward. You know, we're going to limit these fisheries, and then they're going to work once we limit them. And it didn't really envision the need to perhaps revisit the limitations. So going forward, pressure on existing fisheries, changes in ecological and climate conditions, more people more in need of more economic opportunities, all those things are likely to create a petition or some other form that suggests to the commission, you need to limit entry to this fishery. In addition to that, I think we are going to be called upon, and perhaps in the not too distant future, to look at some existing fisheries and decide if they really are a single fishery or if they need to be subdivided. And I don't know what the exact process for that would be. I began discussing it with Chairman Twomley because I just think that that's going to be the reality of the matter. And I cited a few examples before, but I think it gets to a certain point where if you have a commercial fishery but it hasn't been open in so long that, you know, no one's had to pay a renewal fee in 10 years, is that really wise to have it on the books? Is that sending a realistic message to people? What effect is it having on allocation decisions being made by the Board of Fisheries? What effect is it having on Alaskans that don't like those allocation decisions who are coming to their legislators and asking them to do something about it? I think there's an opportunity to have the commission perhaps play a little more proactive role in making sure that the structure that we have doesn't make it any worse for anyone else or any harder for the Board of Fisheries to make those allocation decisions.
Okay.
Senator Watakowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ben, good to see you. I was on this committee 4 years ago, and I voted for you. I do share the Chair's concerns about the size of this organization, and we've got 30, well, there's 28 full, at least according to the Fish and Game Review done just a couple days ago, there's 28 full-time employees, 4 part-time for 32 total PCNs. But I think there was a time in the past where clearly that number was merited, a time when we were processing dozens of applications. And there's it's an excellent report. And again, like Senator Stoltz said, I'm sure you'll have a response to this, but for members of the committee, I would urge you to read the memo that was done February 4th by Commissioner Cotton on this commission. It's a program review, and what I would classify as a pretty scathing review. It talks about the number, and part of it is not your fault. Part of it's just simply a limited number of permit applications and permit transfers. But we peaked in 1998 at 105 permit applications and 42 permit transfers, and in 2013 we had 3 permit applications. And that's not your fault. That's a good thing. I mean, it's less work. But we only had 3, and we had 13 permit transfers. In 2012, we had 3 permit applications and 9 permit transfers. In 2011, we had 5 permit applications and 24 permit transfers. So the workload seems to be decreasing significantly. And again, not criticizing you. That's a good thing. But the area of concern is the adjudications backlog, which the commissioner found that there was a backlog of permit applications of 28 cases, and nearly all the current cases have been in adjudication for 15 or more years. And in each of the last 2 years, the commissioners, this is a direct statement, in each of the last 2 years, the commissioners adjudicated only 3 permit applications. The transfers he classifies as being simple. But here's, and if I could, Madam Chair, I'd like to read just two short paragraphs of this, because I think it's important. Is direct quote from this report. However, now, 9 years later, the reasons for delay, these 15-year delays, are no longer valid. The commissioners now issue only a handful of permit applications each year. The commission normally strives to complete administrative reviews of emergency and permanent transfers in the same calendar year when the transfers take place. However, recently the commission allowed a backlog of reviews to accumulate and did not complete the final review of cases from 2012 and 2013 until late in calendar year 2014. This seriously reduced level of production came at a time when the commission and their immediate support staff consisted of up to 5 attorneys, an operations manager, an administrative clerk, and 2 executive secretaries, 1 temporary. One more paragraph, Madam Chair, if I could. Equally important is that the commission's diminished performance occurs when the agency is only minimally involved in other tasks. The commission has neither limited a commercial fishery in 10 years nor developed any optimum numbers of permits for limited fisheries other than another important statutory duty. So I'll stop right there, and maybe you can respond to that. And then the commissioner lists a number of potential alternatives, and one of which is status quo, but one of which is significantly altering the structure of the commission and integrating a lot of the functions into Fish and Game. And I don't know what the right answer is, but it appears clear to me that changes need to be made. And maybe you could just comment on that.
Madam Chairman, Senator Bielikowski, I certainly have read it. This review was initiated in the prior administration with the prior Commissioner of Fish and Game. At the time, it was actually referred to as an internal review, although I don't think we ever thought it was going to remain internal. We did think that we would have a chance to see some of the conclusions drawn by the investigator, Mr. Lawson, and respond to them to make sure that they didn't contain factual inaccuracies before it was released. And it was published on the Fish and Game website last Wednesday with no prior notice to me. None whatsoever. And Chairman Twomley was actually in Seattle with some medical problems with a family member of his at the time as well. So that was an unfortunate surprise. I'm certain that Commissioner Cotton did not mean to do that deliberately. It may have been someone on his staff that thought that was the appropriate thing to do. It's difficult for me at this hearing, and I'm not trying to be evasive, because we are going to have a conversation about it, Madam Chairman, and there's no question, and we should have a conversation about it. There are many things that, and I've read the report about 2.5 times now. We are in the process of trying to make sure that we respond, that we accept the things that we think are strong and verify that need to be accepted, but the things that are inaccurate that we're responding to. And so we're preparing a written response. I would certainly hope that the department would be willing to put it on their website, but I guess we could put it on ours. This report is only on Fish and Game's website, not on CFPC's right now. So there are going to be some of those assertions in there where we will come back and point out what are probably misleading, even though not intentionally, but are probably leading people to not exactly the right conclusion. Once we've separated the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, or the fish from the fish meal, I don't know, then we can try to come up with maybe a smaller universe of things where we can discuss what efficiencies can happen. Certainly, the adjudications backlog is a valid point to raise. Again, the investigator of the report, I met with him for 2.5 or 3 hours right when he initiated it, and I never had any sort of follow-up contact from him. Any of you who were here while I was advocating on behalf of the sunset date being extended or removed for the weathered vein scallop fishery, know that I was involved in some other activities at that time, and I wasn't at my desk looking through banker's boxes of 30-year-old fish tickets trying to write a decision. And I think that's the other thing that I would say. The cases that still remain are the thorniest and hardest to get your mind around. I mean, and you're an attorney, Madam Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, so you know what that old kind of file is, the one that's in the office, and you have to go pick it up and say, okay, I'm going to have to read through this thing again and try to get my mind around it and try to decide what I think the right outcome is. And in this case, the case of CFPC, the consequences of an adverse decision can really be rippling because they can lead to the undoing of prior limitations, creating a vast new workload. That's the last thing any of us want at this point in time. So I guess, in a nutshell, if I may, Madam Chair, we will come up with a response to the specific contents of that report. And additionally, we're continuing to work with the legislative auditors who will have a preliminary audit version out. They, under their regulations, if not their statute, have to give us some sort of an opportunity to respond, which we're grateful for. That final report will come out, and then at that point we'll have the review done by Mr. Lawson, our response, a legislative audit, and a wealth of information about how best to go forward. I firmly believe that the independence of the agency, and I think Mr. Lawson agrees with this conclusion, that there needs to be some independence in the decision-making capacity, but there could probably be somewhat less staff involved in that independent decision-making. As a general statement, I think I'm comfortable with that, and it's probably in the details that we'll have to have a longer conversation about it. So, Madam Chairman, I'm not arguing with the Senator, Senator Wilikowski, but I just want to make sure that some of those procedural facts were clear to the committee.
Thank you. Further questions from committee members?
I have one, Madam
okay.
Chair.
Okay, Senator Michiki.
Just to follow up to Senator Wilikowski's question, actually, Mr. Brown, or Commissioner Brown, it's certainly fair to say that you believe in a continuous improvement process. I mean, do you see some capacity for improvement and cost reduction in the operation of the commission going forward?
Madam Chairman, Senator Michiki, I do, because I think that once we get a clear picture of what the closing down process is of the not fully adjudicated fisheries, that might create opportunities for a new staffing model to handle a new limitation process. I think that's going to be kind of the Rubicon we might cross. Because, again, there will be requests for new limitation. There may be requests to subdivide or right size or tweak existing fisheries. That doesn't have to be done with the same model that was there for this crushing cavalcade of permit applications in the initial 68 fisheries. So yes, but I don't think it should be done rashly or quickly. I mean, saving several $100,000 a year is a worthy goal, but not if it leads to a whole bunch of expensive litigation that goes on and on, because then you eat through those savings pretty quickly. And
the perfect storm of circumstances could lead to an adverse outcome like that. You know, some key reversals in some key fisheries could really upset the entire apple cart. I mean, I'm using non-fish metaphors today, and I apologize for that. So, yes, Senator Machicki, through the chair, there is definitely a way forward, and we will try to be as efficient as possible, just like everyone else in state government, I think.
Thank you.
Very good. Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and committee members.
So next, we're going to hear from Vern Ruprecht, another appointee. After we've heard from Mr. Ruprecht, we will open the floor to and the lines to public comment. Welcome, Mr. Ruprecht.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Vern Ruprecht. I'm a resident of the city of Wasilla. I was not born in Alaska. I was born in Massachusetts, went to school there, high school. I came to Alaska in 1972 as a young GI, made my pass through the last year of the Vietnam War from here. I returned, went back, got out of the service. I went to college for 18 months, obtained a two-year degree, and came back to Alaska. I've been back ever since. During my time in Alaska, I did mechanicking work and expediting a parts during the pipeline. When that ran dry, I went to work for the Department of Veterans and Military Affairs because I remained in the Army Reserve at that time. Full-time employment as an operations officer, operations sergeant, and then I petitioned to go to Army OCS, became a commissioned officer. In 1978 was when I was actually commissioned in February. I worked full-time until about 1980 or 81. I went back to the University of Alaska at Anchorage, finished my Bachelor's of Arts degree in Criminal Justice. I worked for the Department of Corrections, both as a corrections officer and institutional probation and parole officer for a number of years, but I'd always had a lifetime dream, and that was to become an attorney. I sometimes question the judgment of that. I went back into the Army for another advanced school for education as an officer, and then I attended Creighton University School of Law from 1989 to 1992. I returned back to Alaska subsequent to that. I worked for or with the law firm of Stepovich, Kennelly, and Stepovich. I was with them 6 years with a brief stint, 3 months as an investigator for the Human Rights Commission. I elected then to open up my own law practice in the Wasilla area and stayed connected with them. I did that until 2008 on a full-time basis when I ran for the office of mayor of Wasilla. I did two terms, 6 years, as the mayor of that city, and the mayor of the city of Wasilla is, in fact, the manager and the personnel director of the city. After that, I went out of office on October 20th of 2014, took a little hiatus, and then I went to work for a group of a medical practice as an in-house counsel to help them organize as they're expanding. I put my letter of intent into the office of the governor because I like serving in government. I enjoy doing it. I think there's a lot of need. I think there's a need for some management in it. And then I was called upon to take this position. And I said, okay, I would do it, to come on board as a commissioner of CFAC. And now I appear for you in front of you today.
Great. Thank you very much for that introduction. Questions from committee members? Senator Machicki?
I have a tendency to ask pretty consistent questions, Madam Chair, if you don't mind, through the chair. And if UFA has not yet endorsed anyone, I assume you also, to date, haven't received an endorsement from the fishing industry?
Through the chair to the senator, no, to the best of my knowledge, I have not.
Okay. We asked about sort of pertinent experience, and it sounds frankly like yours is similar to Mr. Brown's. Do you want to just explain how your life experience ties to the work of the commission?
Well, I certainly don't have any interest in commercial fishing other than, I don't hold a permit. I'm not a commercial fisherman. I did have a time back in the late 80s when we were with the mariculture, and I was working with some fellows out of Homer, and we were trying to develop clam fishing down there, up Kashmak Bay. That was a long haul, a long time ago, and long ago. I was at the Sitka Conference in 1987 for that. I always had an interest in it. You know, I where I was born and raised as a kid and a teenager was between the fishing port of Gloucester and New Bedford. I mean, essentially right on the coast. So, I mean, I'm very familiar with it and lobster fishing, and from that perspective, then all the years I spent most of my life in Alaska. So I've known an awful lot of commercial fishermen, and I think it's an important thing because there's a resource that definitively needs protection in the state of Alaska. We do know historically the limited entry and what brought that about. There was a time historically in the state of Alaska, as the big operators were up here, they were shipping out over 5,000 cases of packaged fish a year, and that diminished to like 2 million. Something had to be done. We do know in 69-70 there was an absolute at critical mass in the Cook Inlet where that fishery was just absolutely depleted. This is a renewable resource because it's biological, but it can cease to exist if some prophylactic isn't put in there to ensure that it does survive and it is viable and it is economically viable. It's over $1 billion a year operation in the state of Alaska with 74,000 people directly engaged in it. And then you have all the collateral people, fuel, gear, you name it, rubber boots, Helly Hansen's, there's all kinds of things. So from the perspective of the practice of law, I did contract law, personal injury work, I did administrative law work, and a lot of criminal litigation. I have argued before the State Court of Appeals, Supreme Court, Federal District Court, Ninth Circuit Court, and one case before the United States Supreme Court in 2002 with a co-counsel, Darrell Thompson, from Anchorage. So it's the lifelong dream became a reality, even though it took 9 years to get that one case just to the U.S. Supreme Court. So I'm very familiar with the need, or, you know, you have to take reasoned decisions, because what I've reviewed so far, Senator, is that there's a long, tortured avenue in this, and as the courts did criticize the commissioner one time, quoting Dickens out of Bleak House in the case of Jaundice versus Jaundice, which is really a play on words, is Jaundice versus Jaundice. Why would it take so long that so many people have gone this way, that way, and it's a tortured record? And so I think we're at that point now, and that was in an era when there were so many cases to adjudicate and so much work to do. We're at a point right now where we should be able to come to quicker, more recent decisions as ALJs, because we are essentially set at that level like district court judges to move cases forward without triggering something from the state Supreme Court, remanding it back, and then it goes back collaterally, reopen that whole fishery, and reopen all the permits. We want to avoid that because that is not cost-effective and it's not smart.
Follow-up, Senator Machicki?
Yes, ma'am, through the chair, Mr. Ruprecht. We were mayors together. I've known you for a long time. So I know that this is something that you've done well with in Wasilla. So on efficiency, now that you realize you're up for confirmation, have you looked at the operation of the entry commission? Do you have you recognized that there are some... There are some opportunities for improvement?
Well, through Madam Chair to the Senator, yes, I've read the lawsuit report. In fact, I gave it a first read, and then I gave it a critical read for about 4 hours on Saturday and started picking that thing apart. Now, not knowing all of the vagaries of what goes on in that commission or all the personalities down there, we always have to be a little bit careful to look at something in a report and say what number two pencil was used to shade it. So, as it's been already explained to this committee, you know, we need to take a time to, like, dissect it. But certainly, I've read the memo down from Commissioner Cotton. I understand the problems we have, having lived through the absolute collapse of our economic system in this state in the 1980s, and where we were always competing with every blue top flapping up the Glen Highway heading to the border. And those were interesting days. I don't want to see us go back there. I certainly don't. But if it requires that we have to consolidate and streamline, I think it's going to take a little time to get through the process, not forever, but it's going to take some time to get through the process so that we don't make a bad error that's going to be extremely costly for the state of Alaska subsequently.
And then just the same final question, Madam Chair, is just on limiting entry or opening fisheries, or if you have to execute a changing dynamic those changes are painful to a lot of people on every side of every issue. You've dealt with that a little bit in Wasilla, but on a statewide, facing a statewide theater, how do you feel you're equipped on executing some of those changes?
Through Madam Chair, to the Senator, for those of us who've been in elected office, and then you sit in position such as either a legislator or a mayor, and in the city of Wasilla, that's a strong mayor, former government, you get used to the slings and arrows of not making everybody happy. But I've always tried to analogize it to compromise in that, you know, when you're negotiating compromise, everybody pushes away from the table a little hungry, but at least we got the business done. And so, yeah, you know, nobody likes to face... One thing I learned being the mayor, and I thank you for your compliment, was never argue with people who buy ink by the barrel. And so... You need to be very careful with that. And but, you know, it is what it is. We have to get the people's business done. And it's sometimes it works out. Sometimes it's a little painful. But those are the decisions that have to be made, especially when we're talking about the economics of this state.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Stoltz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I just on the issue, I kind of felt a little shot this way on the authority of the legislature. The general authority of the legislature under our natural resource section of the Constitution says the legislature shall provide for the utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources belonging to the state, including land and waters, for the maximum benefit of the people. There is no reference to the Board of Fish in Alaska's Constitution, so the admonition for people to look at the Constitution, now whether that's the best policy or not, you can certainly debate that, but I just don't like things said on the record that aren't accurate. The Board of Fish is not even mentioned in our state constitution. The general authority of the legislature, we have a dissenter and one of the authors there, and just wanted to make sure we had accuracy on the table. And we certainly have public record of what's evolved, but...
Do you have a question?
There was a pretty pointed thing, and I don't want the public, and I would have been remiss in not that. First, I want to say, Madam Chair, I'm looking at the qualifications of Mr. Ruprecht. They very much mirror... minus the 4 years on the board itself, and meets the education and qualifications. We'll hold a line on the temperance at some time, and we both have that issue. But I'm not afraid to argue with folks that have ink by the barrel, and you're less afraid than you actually said there, and I appreciate that.
Thank you.
But what led you to this particular appointment? You know, we think Mayor Vern from Inland and Wasilla, and just help us out, and what... was this the position available, or did you have a goal in mind on that would help provide some guidance on the process? And
to be candid, through the chair, Senator Stoltz, I put in my letter of intent to the current administration, and I explored the area of law, using that, my military experience, my corrections experience, or any place you think you could use me, and I would be helpful and useful to the state of Alaska in that capacity. When I received a call would I would take this position, I said certainly, because as we're well aware, in our end of the state, fisheries is a major issue, especially in the Cook Inlet. And, you know, we have the ports there of Homer, Seward, Valdez, in just our area of the state. And I know how important it is to strike that balance. And to address your issue as is to the authority of the legislature, I'd like to address that. I'm familiar with the state constitution. I'm familiar with Article 8. I'm also familiar with the sections 15, 16, and 17 that drive the sustainability and the rights of the people. I've also become more familiar with Title 16, Chapter 43, which is certainly in your hands to promulgate that statutes that guide this commission from the organics of that alone. And so, yes, I mean, we're charged with a certain duty, and we have to stay within it. And I'm not the type of person that would argue with the authority of the Constitution or the authority of a legislature to change a statute. And I may disagree with it, and I'm certain, Senator Stoltz, you would hear from me if I thought it was bad policy, but then if I think it's good policy, then it would go forward. I know that there's some issues about setting this optimum number, and that's from what I'm understanding so far, is kind of a clumsy system, which needs probably some legislative addressment to help that be clearer and more streamlined and an easier process to work through. So, you know, arguing with the legislature, that's your duty to uphold this Constitution and promulgate these statutes.
Thank you. Did you have further questions, yeah, Senator Stoltz?
Yeah, and I just want on the record, Mayor, I don't think the legislature is often well suited to be in on the, and it's usually a matter of last resort, or and often so and there's a very selective role inviting themselves in or out from the various user groups. Often, so it's in both sides, whether it's the sport and port and commercial. But I just wanted to know, Madam Chair, Mayor. Who do you view as your constituency when you're sitting on this the CFEC?
Well, through the chair, Senator Stoltz, that's commercial fishery. And since it's commercial fishery, the first constituency has to look at the sustainability and viability of that fishery in the state. But then all of a sudden, it's a little broader because I think there's a need to view it so that it doesn't absolutely diminish sports use or subsistence use, which has always been a very important thing to the state of Alaska and its people. So its constituents are rather broad. Everybody likes to eat fish and seafood. So,
and Madam Chair, this will be the last.
I
appreciate the breadth of that answer because it is, many folks will come forward and say I represent the folks that are paying through their fees that you recognize the resource as I read through the longer answer. And I am actually not hanging with bated breath to decide whether to vote for or against you. I'm inclined to support you on what UFA advises me to do, but others can wait for that. I think you've acquitted yourself very well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is a reminder to the good senator on my left. I'll always remind him to support United Fishermen's direction they give him. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
I recognize him.
So now we'll open public comment on these two appointees. Is there anyone online? Thatcher. All right, thank you. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to comment on these two appointees? You may sit down. Thank you so much, Mr. Rupov. Sorry.
Madam Chair.
Is there anyone in the room that wishes to comment? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We have a third person that we will be interviewing today for the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, and that being Michael Gallagher. I believe Mr. Gallagher is on the phone. Is that correct, Thatcher? Great. So while Thatcher's opening up that line, I'll do the same thing for this board and commission. So this is the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. It is in the Department of Administration. It requires legislative confirmation. The term of office is 6 years. There are three members of the board appointed by the governor. One member shall be a petroleum engineer who holds a certificate of registration as an engineer with a degree in petroleum engineering. That seat is filled currently on the commission. The second commission member is a geologist who holds a certificate as a professional geologist, has a degree in geology. That seat is also filled on this commission right now. The open seat that we're addressing is described thusly. One member who shall have training or experience that gives the person a fundamental understanding of the oil and gas industry in the state. So that's the description of the seat that we'll be interviewing right now. The function of the AOGCC is to regulate oil and gas drilling, development and production, reservoir depletion and metering operations, to prohibit physical waste of hydrocarbons, protect correlative rights of mineral interest owners, and assure maximum ultimate recovery of hydrocarbon resources, to administer Alaska's Class II Underground Injection Control Program, and determine well categories under the Federal Natural Gas Policy Act of 1978. The salary for this position is $137,000 a year. The chair makes slightly more at $142,000 a year. This seat is, there is a chair already designated, so this is a $137,000 a year salary, and the person does become a member of the public employees retirement system. So, Mr. Gallagher, can you hear us?
Yes, I can, Madam Chair.
Great. Welcome. What I'll ask you to do is introduce yourself, and in doing so, we do have your application for this commission in front of us, which probably contains your resume, as it does. But if you would elaborate on that and just fill us in on your qualifications for this position.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And the committee, thank you for taking the time this afternoon to consider me for this important appointment. The reason I'm interested in this position is to give back to the state. I feel I can contribute with my knowledge and experience in the industry. I know the importance of this commission, and if confirmed, I look forward to continuing to protect the public's interest in exploration and development of Alaska's valuable oil, gas, geothermal resources through the application of practices designed to ensure greater ultimate recovery and the protection of health, safety, fresh groundwater, and the rights of all owners to recover their share of the resource. Alaska has given so much to me and my family that I'm grateful to have this chance now to give back to the great state of Alaska. I am grateful that I was able to raise my family with my wife in Alaska. Our two children were born and raised in Alaska, and after attending college, they both live and work in Alaska. I have over 38 years experience in the oil and gas, civil and vertical construction industries. I have spent over 19 years with the Laborers International Union of North America, Local 341. As a business agent, vice president, president, and business manager. In this position, I negotiated bargaining agreements with other employers and managed the day-to-day business operation of the local union. One of the duties with the local union, I was a trustee of a $560 million pension plan and $14 million health and welfare plan. In that position, I was involved in many judicial hearings. The Board of Trustees was responsible for conducting appeal hearings for the trust. While hearing the appeals, we were to look at the facts and the evidence that was presented to us and make a decision based on facts, evidence, and according to the plan document. Throughout my career, I've been fortunate with wonderful opportunities to learn and contribute, and I see this appointment as another such opportunity. I'm especially pleased and honored to have the opportunity to serve the people of Alaska as part of such a well-respected commission in concert with such intelligent, honest, ethical, and hard-working colleagues as Commissioner Forrester and Commissioner Seamont and the staff. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gallagher. Questions from committee members?
I have a couple.
Senator Machicki?
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Just a few questions for you. I read your resume and some of your discussions about experience in the oil and gas industry. However, I have some specific questions. Just as you know, the work of the AOGCC involves petroleum, geology, engineering, drilling and well operations, and oil and gas law. Do you have any specific training or experience in any of these areas?
In petroleum, the geology and engineering, no. But as a trustee of a pension plan and through other means, I've had experience in the judicial process on issues relating to appeals of people that have problems.
Follow-up, Senator Machicki?
So I guess more specifically, there's you probably heard the term downhole experience, Mr. Gallagher?
Yes, I have.
Which is a primary necessary skill set of an AOGCC commissioner. Do you have any of that experience?
No, the answer is no to that.
Okay.
Follow-up, Senator Bucicchi?
I do have a couple. Okay. So, again, reading here, and I'm, this is a very important position. I mean, our state revenue and the conservation of our oil and gas resources largely depends on the work of this commission. So how would you specifically tie your life experience to that of the job description of an AOGCC commissioner?
Well, over the last 40 years, through the chair, Senator McChicky, over the last 35, 40 years, I've been involved in one way or another within development in Alaska, and including the oil and gas up here. I know how important it is. I'm a very pro-development person. I've represented people in the oil and gas industry, and I feel that after retiring several years ago, and after taking on a couple of projects, I thought I would like to get involved and help with more development of this state to make sure that it's done right and safe, because it's the right thing to do, because if there's issues, problems, it's bad for the industry. And I have two wonderful kids, and hopefully someday I'll have grandkids, and I hope they will be able to work in the industry up here also.
Well, follow-up?
Yes, please, Madam Chair. Mr. Gallagher, have you ever been on a drilling rig during a subsurface safety valve test, and do you understand the technology around those tests?
Through the chair, Senator McChicky, no, I haven't. I do have plans to travel down on the Kenai, hopefully next week. They're trying to schedule a visit on one of the drill rigs, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
Okay, and I just wanted to make a comment. You do have a lot of pipeline construction, operation, and maintenance experience, but you do realize that the AOGCC does not have a role in any of those areas. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Bucicchi, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions from committee members? Yes, Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Commissioner Gallagher, how many staff work for the AOGCC?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I've only been here a short period of time, but my understanding is we have about 29 total staff people. We have two geologists, six engineers, seven field inspectors, several IT people, several data management and administrative staff. And my understanding of, and I've only been here a short period of time, and I've had jury duty for a little bit of that time and a board meeting that I was asked to sit on, but the way it looks like they have the staff set here is just really good. It's very efficient. The technical team, the geologists and engineers, are divided in a couple of teams, and they work in certain areas, hypothetically like on the North Slope. One has west of Prudhoe Bay, the other one has east of Prudhoe Bay. And down on the Kenai, one team has the west side of Cook Inlet, and the other has the east side. And then the inspection team is headed up with an engineer, and underneath him he has seven inspectors, and they're divided. A couple of them are up on the slope, and a couple of them are on the Kenai, and they have a rotating schedule.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, very brief. So with this team that works for the commission, you're an at-large member. You're not being appointed to one of the engineer or geologist positions. Do you feel that you can get adequate advice or answers to questions you might have?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I feel very confident that the technical aspect of it is here within the commission. I do understand and can read blueprints very well. I understand the development plan. I've reviewed them. I feel very comfortable reviewing those. I do have some to learn on the downhole process, but I've always had challenges in my life, and I've always been very successful. I've always been able to work my way to very good positions.
Thank you. Further questions from committee members?
All right, I have a couple questions. I'm looking under education and training here on your resume. I see, of course, high school, and then I see 1 year at Alpena Community College. Do you have, it doesn't look like you may, you have a college degree. Would I be correct in that?
Madam Chair, yes.
All right. You signed the commission's decision on January 26th, related to a matter regarding ConocoPhillips. Can you walk us through how you arrived at that decision and your level of comfort signing that commission decision?
I signed that on what date? Or excuse me, Madam Chair, what date was that?
January 26th.
I would, Madam Chair, I would have to look at what decision it was, but when I first came in here, I met with the other two commissioners, and they said they want to just throw me into it, reviewing permits, and I did that, and I've reviewed quite a few of them since then, and is what I've done is I've went through it, I've read the permit, and I've went and talked to the appropriate technical staff, whether it was a petroleum engineer or the geologist. That's how I've been reviewing these permits.
So, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
And I've always asked the engineers if there was any issues that they've seen that was a problem. And so I've been asking a lot of questions.
Okay, great. There is a significant amount of confidential information that comes before AOGCC. Consequently, they do sign confidentiality agreements. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, under the Madam Chair, under the statute and the regulations, there's avenues for confidentiality. Excuse me. And the statute and regulation speaks for itself. It's doable, and I support that.
So you would have no reluctance to sign a confidentiality agreement?
Madam Chair, no.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else with questions on? Yes, Senator Michiki.
Mr. Gallagher, I hope you don't take this as a negative attack. Our job is to kind of understand what folks have to offer in the various commissions. And you heard me ask a question with the Board of Fish guys. Maybe you didn't, but I asked questions that were sort of the norm of who we've typically put on these boards for the level of expertise required to do the job well. In this case, the norm has been people with decades of direct oil and gas downhole custody transfer, safety valve testing experience. And I have to admit that I'm a bit concerned in this case. The AOGCC is an understaffed and extremely busy organization, and our reserves, what the AOGCC does is they are on guard for the people of Alaska to make sure that our oil and gas reserves are produced as efficiently and safely as possible. So I'm just relaying to you a little bit of my concern for the lack of experience, and I've heard your discussion about you may be the quickest learner on the planet, but I'm not sure that it's the right role for training. But and that's just a comment, and I'm interested in your response to that, Mr. Gallagher.
Through the chair, Senator McChickie. I've been in this industry for quite a few years, and under the statute, I definitely qualify. There's technical staff here that I haven't been here long enough to know whether or not the other two commissioners utilize them. I was in one meeting where we did, and but I feel very confident that I'm qualified for the position.
Thank you.
Follow-up, Senator? Any other questions from committee members? Senator Welikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I did just want to remind members of the committee that in terms of other appointees that have been, other people who have been appointed to this commission, was one was a former Governor Sarah Palin, who had zero to my knowledge, downhole experience and zero oil and gas experience, and she was made the chair of the committee. So there, I did just want the committee to recognize that.
Sure. I appreciate your comment, Senator Welikowski. And I will also point out that the descriptor for this seat was changed in 2007 to be what it is now. The person shall have training or experience that gives a person a fundamental understanding of the oil and gas industry in the state. That purpose of that change was to actually appoint people with that fundamental understanding rather than simply an interest in the industry. Any other questions from committee members for Mr. Gallagher? All right, seeing none, is there anyone online who wishes to make public comment? Is there anyone in the room that wishes to make public comment on Mr. Gallagher? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. So that's the three designees today. So I'm going to read now the document that committee members will be asked to sign. In accordance with AS 390580, the Resources Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, Vern Ruppert, Wasilla. Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, Benjamin Brown, Juneau. Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, Michael Gallagher, Anchorage. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. I'll pass the document around for committee members to sign, and after you've done that, we will be adjourned. Our next meeting is on Wednesday, February 11th. We'll be receiving an update from the Department of Fish and Game at that time. So at this time, I will adjourn the committee. The time is 4:53 p.m.